if she's still alive. I'm worried that maybe my grandmother killed Leah.
Midge sucked in a breath.
It's hard to imagine, but it's not out of the question when you consider what you already know about your grandmother. She pushed your mother, her own daughter, down the stairs. Maybe she killed Leah by accident. Find your housekeeper. She has the answers you need.
Of course she does. Why else would she disappear when I started pressing her for information?
But who's she covering for? My mother and grandmother are both dead.
Maybe she's covering for herself. I'm not saying she's the one who harmed your sister, but she may have helped with the cover-up. And what about the cook? How does she fit into the picture?
Who knows?
Maybe Sally Bell had something to do with Leah's disappearance.
Do you have any idea where she is now?
Midge asked. I'm sure she's dead, Ellie said. She was an old woman, even back then.
Which brings us back to the housekeeper.
Midge looked at the table and picked up her phone.
I might be able to help you find her. I have a couple of online resources I can check. What's her last name?
Washington. Maddie Washington, Ellie said as Midge keyed the name into her phone.
Have you asked Bennett Sr.? He may know how to find her. I'm sure I'll see him at some point over the weekend. I'm happy to mention it to him.
That's fine. Just don't make a big deal out of it. If my grandmother turns out to be a murderer, I don't want the whole town to know about it. I trust Bennett, but the fewer people who know about my situation, the better. So far, I've only told you and Julian.
A wicked grin spread across her lips.
Julian, huh? Is he someone special? The only Julian I know is Julian Haggard.
He's the only Julian I know as well.
She nudged Ellie's arm playfully.
He's a catch, girlfriend. Half the single women in town are lusting after him.
Ellie smiled. Sorry to disappoint you, but Julian and I are just friends.
Then why is your face as red as your hair?
Midge said, tugging a lock of Ellie's hair.
He's a good man. That's all I'm saying. He didn't deserve his wife walking out on him like that.
They sat in silence while they sipped their wine and watched the blue sky fade to yellow.
I'm curious, Midge said, breaking the silence at last. When your father came to Charleston for you after your mother died, did your grandmother mention anything about him having another child?
Ellie jerked her head back. Was it possible her father knew about her twin sister? Surely he would have told her if he did.
As far as I know, she never mentioned my twin.
But my past is not my father's favorite topic of conversation.
I didn't mean to hit a sore nerve, Midge said.
It's a legitimate question, Midge. The first one I plan to ask my father when I talk to him.
Ellie finished her wine.
But there's another possibility that makes the most sense to me. My mother mentions putting us up for adoption several times in her journals. My guess is she either put Leah up for adoption or found someone to take care of her.
If that's true, why Leah, not you?
Because my grandmother hated Leah more, if that's even possible. My twin was the spitting image of our Jewish father. I'm embarrassed to admit my grandmother was a bigot.
Lines creased Midge's forehead. You may be onto something, Ellie. I'm sure your mother was terrified for your lives after your grandmother pushed her down the stairs. If she had the choice of getting only one of you to safety,
she would have chosen the one most at risk.
Chapter 21 Ellie Ellie declined Midge's offer to drive her home.
Thanks, but I'd rather walk.
Energized by the crisp, salty air, she race-walked down the waterfront to East Bay Street. She was determined to find out what happened to her sister and locate her if she was still alive. She'd been so intent on finding her answers, she hadn't considered what these revelations could mean for her. Maybe she and Leah would become friends, long-lost twin sisters with decades of making up to do. She called Julian when she was a block away from home. I need a favor.
So now you need my help, he said in a teasing tone. You've been avoiding my texts all day.
I'll explain when you come over. When she heard Mills barking in the background, she slowed her pace. Had she been presumptuous in thinking he'd make himself available to her whenever she summoned him? Unless, of course, you're in the middle of something.
Actually, I'm in the middle of making shrimp ceviche. If you give me 45 minutes, I'll bring dinner.
Relief swept over her. Her feelings for him were deepening. You're on. I can never say no to ceviche. Or to you, she thought. Ellie took her first shower in 2 days and dressed in a gray knit tunic, black leggings, and ankle booties. She smeared on some makeup and blow-dried her strawberry blonde mane. She was descending the stairs when Julian arrived with Mills by his side, a sketchbook tucked under his arm, and a tote bag stuffed with edible goodies. She took the tote bag from him and led the way to the kitchen.
I love what you've done with the place, he said about the empty rooms. One can actually hear themselves thinking here now.
I know, right? She said over her shoulder. Makes me want to go out and buy a pair of roller skates. He was unloading the food containers and bottle of wine from the tote bag when she reached for his sketch pad. Are you planning to work while you're here? He smacked her hand away.
I have some drawings I want to show you, but they'll have to wait until after dinner. Let's get the work out of the way first. I'm guessing you don't need my help moving furniture since there's none left.
Ha ha, aren't you the comedian? When she told him what she wanted, he dropped his smile and studied her face.
Have you been drinking?
I may have had a glass of wine with Midge earlier, but that has nothing to do with this. She took him by the hand and dragged him through the house and up the stairs to the second floor. She handed him the tools he needed as he rehung her grandmother's bedroom door.
There, now.
He stepped back to admire his work.
Are we going to stand here and wait to see if the door closes?
She slapped his arm with the back of her hand. You'll understand my paranoia when I tell you what my grandmother did to my mother. Back in the kitchen, Julian uncorked the bottle of rosé he'd brought over, while Ellie filled 2 bowls with ceviche topped off with the pita triangles he'd toasted. They took their dinner to the table on the terrace.
The air is so fresh, Ellie inhaled deeply.
I know the tree isn't in bloom right now, but I can almost smell the fragrant magnolia blossoms.
The spring and autumn months are by far the most enjoyable in Charleston. You have an unpleasant surprise in store for you come summer. The humidity here is almost unbearable.
Ellie thought about it a minute. Now that you mention it, I remember how hot and humid the weather could get in the summer. We used to keep our windows open all the time, with the ceiling fans rotating on full blast. We must not have had air conditioning back then, or my grandmother was too cheap to turn it on. With their arms occasionally touching, they nibbled at their ceviche and sipped wine, while she filled him in on what she'd learned in her mother's final journals.
What did your father have to say about all this?
He asked when she finished talking. She stared down at her empty plate.
Please tell me you called your father.
Not yet, but I'm going to on Sunday. She tucked a strand of hair behind her ear as she looked up from her plate. It's been a long couple of weeks, and I need the weekend to myself to process everything.
I can understand that.
Propping his elbows on the table, he leaned closer to her.
Do your plans for the weekend include me?
Only if you're interested in helping me buy a car. I figured it was time I returned my rental to the airport. He puffed at his chest.
As it happens, I'm an expert at negotiating good deals on cars. What kind of car are you looking for? I know salespeople at most of the dealerships.
I was thinking about a Mini Cooper. The small size is perfect for navigating this awful traffic.
And for chauffeur and pipsqueak around town.
When Pixie's ears perked up, Julian reached down and petted her on the head.
Good girl, you're learning your new name.
Ellie laughed and tossed her wadded paper napkin at him. They took their empty plates to the kitchen, rinsed and stored them in the dish rack, and refilled their wine glasses.
Can I look at these now? She asked, her hand on his sketchbook.
He nodded.
You may.
She flipped through the elevation drawings he'd done of her kitchen. Several of the drawings showed walls of cabinets with built-in commercial-grade appliances. One of the two she liked the best featured a table and banquette incorporated into a wall of windows, while the other was an illustration of the wet bar area with wine storage they'd discussed.
These are stunning, Julian. I hate to disappoint you when you've given my renovation so much thought, but I talked to Midge about putting my house on the market today.
Do you really want to make that decision now with so many unanswered questions looming over you?
She started to interrupt, but he silenced her with a fingertip to her lips.
This house has been filled with too much sadness for way too long. She has strong bones and an honest soul. Why not breathe a little life back into her by giving her a facelift?
His face softened as he spoke of the house as one might a loved one. She realized then the depth of his commitment to the historic buildings in the area. I'm not sure how much life a 40-year-old unmarried woman and her pipsqueak dog can breathe into a centuries-old mansion. She flipped to the next page of his sketchbook.
A drawing of her, reclined in the leather chair in his den,
her hands gripping her mother's journal, and her face pinched in pain. She ran her fingers across the drawing.
Whoa, I look so...
fixated. You didn't even realize I was sketching you.
I was going to say desperate.
She let the cover on the sketchbook fall shut and backed away from him.
Is that what I am to you, Julian? A lost soul you feel the need to rescue like one of your beloved old buildings?
Hold on a minute. I'm sorry you got the wrong impression. Yes, your emotions are raw in the sketch. But desperate? Never. Pained? For sure. And understandably so, considering what you're going through. But that's what I admire so much about you. You're not afraid to show your emotions. You're one of the few women I've met in a very long time who has real, honest-to-goodness feelings.
Closing the gap between them, he cupped her face in his hands.
What are you to me? Right now, you're my friend, but I'd like for you to be a whole lot more than that one day, once you've sorted out your life.
She kissed him softly on the lips.
I've been trying to figure out my past for a very long time, Julian. I stopped putting my life on hold for it years ago. At least, I thought I had. Until I came here. I've become obsessed with reading my mother's journals. And, in the process, I've let an important part of myself slip away from me. I had an aha moment today about what happened in the past.
What's that?
He asked, his voice a hoarse whisper. It's not my past. Confusion crossed his face. That didn't come out right. Of course it's my past. I was here, I lived it. But I was merely a child. What happened to me here happened because of the decisions other people made for me, not because of the decisions I made for myself. I'm not to blame for any of it. And being angry at my grandmother is giving her the power to control me all over again. I refuse to let that happen. I'm taking my life back. Next week, I will solve this mystery of my missing sister once and for all. In the meantime, I plan to enjoy my weekend. If I want to spend it having sex with you, then by golly, I'm going to do just that.
A naughty boy grin spread across his face, bringing a sparkle to his golden eyes.
Do you?
Do I what?
Want to spend the weekend having sex with me?
Again, she kissed him on the lips, this time with more passion.
Damn right I do.
He kissed her back with increasing urgency. He pressed his body against hers, pinning her against the refrigerator. When they came up for air several minutes later, they noticed two sets of brown eyes looking up at them. Ellie laughed.
Why do I feel like we're the teenagers and they're the parents, and they just caught us making out on the family room sofa?
Because it's not far from the truth.
He nibbled at her lip.
Are you sure this is what you want?
She let out a soft moan.
Positive.
What do we do about them?
He tipped his head at the dogs. Give them a treat and lock them in my studio, she said as she reached for the box of greenies.
Ellie had never known a man who made love with such tenderness and skill. Not that she considered herself an experienced lover, but she'd been in several long-term relationships. They finally dozed off around 3, and she woke an hour later to the sound of the wind howling in the eaves. She slid out of bed, slipped on her robe, and tiptoed down the hall to her grandmother's room, relieved to find the door still open. She moved to the window and stared out over the trees swaying in the park, to the full moon glowing off the harbor. This bedroom offered the best views of the waterfront in the house. She imagined sipping coffee on the piazza in the mornings and making love by the light of the moon at night. Maybe Julian was right. Maybe it was time to breathe new life into this house. If she wasn't the right person to do it, then maybe her sister would be. Did her sister have a husband and children? She was suddenly curious to know about her potential extended family, her nieces, nephews, and brother-in-law. She sensed Julian behind her before she felt his breath tickle her neck.
I take it your grandmother's spirit has exited the premises?
Mm-hmm. She leaned into him.
Apparently so.
I told you I don't believe in ghosts, but I do believe, like the Gullah people believe, that the souls of the recently departed may sometimes have a difficult time moving on to wherever they're supposed to be. In my grandmother's case, I shudder to think about where that somewhere might be. I don't care where she is, as long as she's no longer in this house. With any luck, she's made atonement for her sins.
The room filled with the citrusy fragrance of magnolia blooms.
Julian tugged on her arm.
Come back to bed, sweetheart. We have several more hours before dawn.
Chapter 22. Ellie. Ellie and Julian spent their weekend like a newly married couple, tackling their to-do list while sneaking kisses and gropes every chance they got. He followed her out to the airport to drop off her rental car, and then drove her around to the various dealerships while she shopped brands and models. After much debate, she finally decided on the Mini Countryman. She was torn between Island Blue and Moonwalk Gray, but he convinced her to go with the more subtle color. On the way back to town, they stopped at Hominy Grill for a late lunch on the terrace before returning to the house on South Battery. They appeased the dogs by taking them for a long walk, and then, at Julian's suggestion,
They lugged her bedroom furniture down from the attic to her grandmother's room.
Stop thinking of it as your grandmother's room, Julian said as they wrestled her box spring onto her bed frame. You'll feel right at home in here, surrounded by all your things. Your father will need somewhere to sleep when he comes. This way he can have the guest room.
If he even comes, she said as she stretched her aching back. He wasn't exactly thrilled about me moving to Charleston.
Surely he'll come when he finds out what you've been going through.
Maybe, Ellie said with a shrug, and maybe not. My father is a wonderful man, and we have a close relationship, but he doesn't think dredging up the past is in my best interest.
As a parent, I can see his point. As someone who cares about you, I think you deserve some answers.
Finding out about her sister was the only answer she needed. She hoped it was the only answer she got. Ellie was pleased at the results of their efforts. Her furnishings from California wiped away all traces of her grandmother. The patterned rug was a tad too small, but it covered enough of the floor to warm the room and soften the echo. Crystal lamps adorned matching side tables, while a Kate Spade striped comforter, with its splashes of navy, orange, and several shades of pink, brightened her gray lattice headboard. Her pine armoire occupied most of one wall, and her dresser and two side chairs filled the other. The builder's drywall installers repaired the damage caused by the leak. The painters would take care of the rest. She thought about making a dramatic show on the walls by choosing a bold color in a high-gloss paint. Maybe she would hire a decorator after all. For dinner, they ordered takeout sandwiches and salads from Bull Street Gourmet and Market and picnicked in the park while the dogs chased each other and frolicked in the grass. After they'd finished eating, Julian stretched out on the blanket and placed his head in her lap.
Have you planned what you're going to say to your father when you call him tomorrow?
I'll just wing it. When it comes to my father, I never plan anything. That's his job. Ellie ran her fingers through Julian's dark hair. My father is very level-headed. I'm the one prone to hysteria in the family. She smiled down at him. Does that surprise you? Wrapping his arm around her neck, he pulled her face to his and gave her an upside-down kiss on the lips.
I'm all for the kind of hysteria you exhibited in the bedroom last night.
She touched the tip of her nose to his. There's more where that came from. Sleep with me in my grandmother's room tonight, and I promise to show you how hysterical I can be. As much as she wanted more of what they'd shared the night before, she wanted company on her first night sleeping in her grandmother's room. He sat bolt upright.
Let's go.
Placing her hands on his shoulders, she pushed him back down. Calm down, cowboy. It's still daylight outside.
Fine, but once it gets dark, you better watch out. My fangs will begin to show.
He returned his head to her lap.
Composed as your father may be, learning he has another 40-year-old daughter might come as a shock.
The burden of her responsibility weighed heavily on her. I have no idea how I'm going to break that news. I guess I'll start by telling him about my mother's journals. Julian made certain her first night in her new bedroom was magical. They made love until well past midnight, with the full moon streaming through the bare windows. When the dogs woke them a few minutes before 7, Julian hurried downstairs to let them out and feed them. He returned with a tray of coffee, 2 bowls of oatmeal, and the Sunday paper. They made love again and lounged in bed until after 10. She waited as long as she could, but at 11 o'clock, she and Julian headed downstairs to her studio for her to place the dreaded call to her father. He answered on the second ring and listened patiently while she explained the situation. When she was finished talking, he told her he'd call her back in a few minutes. Julian raised an eyebrow when she drew the phone away from her ear.
Did he hang up on you?
He's going to call me back. That's the way my father operates. He never raises his voice. When he gets angry, he walks away from the situation until he calms down.
Julian rubbed the stubble on his chin. That's impressive. We could all learn a lesson from his playbook.
It's a coping mechanism he acquired from working with temperamental models and movie stars. He furrowed his brow.
He's not still a fashion photographer, is he?
She shook her head. He's worked for National Geographic for years. As Dad likes to say, he prefers wild animals to wild women. When I was growing up, he was gone for weeks at a time, sometimes months, on long expeditions to remote parts of the world. She told Julian about how her stepmother took advantage of her, making her do more than her share of the chores and babysit every night for her stepbrothers while she was down the street drinking wine with her neighbor. Jenny made it sound like her drinking buddy was one of her girlfriends. Turns out she was a he and Jenny was sleeping with him. I found them in bed together when I came home sick early from school one day. My father was in Antarctica at the time. This was before we had cell phones. I had to wait 10 days for him to come home. Longest 10 days of my life. Jenny begged me not to tell him about her affair. She laid the guilt on thick, making me feel like I was the one to blame for breaking up their marriage. Julian shook his head in disgust.
How old were you when this happened?
16, Ellie said, looking at him over the rim of her coffee mug.
How did he respond when you broke the news? I imagine that was one time he lost his cool.
She snickered. As a matter of fact, he didn't even raise his voice when he told her to pack her bags and get out. If you want to know the truth, I think he was relieved to be rid of her. Their marriage had been on the rocks for some time.
Ellie stared down at the phone in her hand.
He's never taken this long to call me back. But when her father finally called back 5 minutes later, his tone was one of concern.
I owe you an apology, honey. I should have never let you go to Charleston alone. How are you holding up?
I'm okay, Dad. I've made a new friend. She winked at Julian. He's been very sympathetic.
That explains the cheerful tone in your voice, Abbott said. I hope I get a chance to meet him.
Julian nibbled at her neck and she pushed his head away. Does that mean you're coming to Charleston?
That's why it took me so long to call you back. I just booked myself on the 6 o'clock flight tonight.
Ellie got up and moved to the window. Thanks for coming, Dad. I know this is a shock for you, but I really need you here with me right now.
I wish you'd called me sooner, sweetheart. I have a lot of questions as to how and why 40 years have gone by without me knowing I have another daughter.
She had so much she wanted to tell him, but she thought it best to wait until she saw him in person. I don't have much furniture in the house, but I have an extra bedroom if you'd like to stay here. Otherwise, there's an inn several blocks down.
We have a lot to talk about. If it's not too much trouble, I'd like to stay with you.
I'd like that. She offered to pick him up at the airport, but when he insisted on getting an Uber, she promised to have a late dinner waiting for him.
That sounds perfect. I should be there by 9 at the latest.
She told him she loved him before ending the call. Within seconds of hanging up with her dad, Ellie's phone rang again, and Midge's name flashed across her screen. Midge talked for a minute straight without pausing to breathe. I've exhausted all my resources, honey, and I came up absolutely zero on Maddie Washington. I'm over at my in-law's house. I haven't mentioned anything to Bennett yet because I wanted to clear it with you first, but you really should talk to them. They knew your mother and grandmother. They may be able to tell you something that might help. We're just finishing with brunch. Can you come over now? Ellie glanced at Julian, who was sitting close enough to hear Midge's voice over the phone. He pointed at himself and shook his head. Can you give me 45 minutes? When Ellie arrived at the Calhouns an hour later, Bennett Jr. and Midge had just departed for an open house they were hosting that afternoon. The housekeeper showed Ellie to the piazza where Bennett Sr. and Lucille were finishing dessert.
Can I offer you a coffee or lemonade? Perhaps a slice of key lime pie?
Lucille asked. I'm fine, but thank you. Lucille quizzed Ellie about how she'd survived the hurricane and how she was settling into the house on South Battery before excusing herself to see her staff in the kitchen. Ellie was careful about what she said to Bennett. She didn't want to give too much away about her knowledge of all that had happened in her grandmother's house in the past. I was wondering, Bennett, if you have any idea how I might get in touch with Maddie. She hasn't come to work since the day of the hurricane. I'm worried she's fallen ill or that her house was damaged badly in the storm. He knitted his bushy gray eyebrows into one.
That's odd. I understand why you're concerned. Unfortunately, I don't have a phone number for Maddie. Whenever I need to speak to her about Eleanor's affairs, I've phoned her at your grandmother's house. I'll double-check my files when I get to the office in the morning, but as far as I know, we don't have any contact information for her.
Ellie lowered her voice and leaned across the table. How much did you know about my mother?
Well, let's see.
He tugged at his chin as he stared out across the adjacent garden.
Not that much, when I think about it. I knew of your mother. She was a celebrity around here during her brief career as a fashion model. She appeared on the covers of all the popular magazines. But she was much younger than me. I can't say we ever actually met. You can imagine the rumors when she suddenly dropped out of sight. I asked your grandmother about her once, early on in our professional relationship. Your grandmother shut me up with a look that nearly stopped my heart. I never asked too many personal questions after that.
Pushing back from the table, he stood up, and she followed his lead.
I need to stretch my legs. Shall we stroll around the garden?
He held his arm out and waved for her to go ahead of him. As they walked through the gravel paths, Bennett pointed out the various plantings, showing off his expertise as a gardener. They arrived at a gazebo and sat down side by side on the teak bench. Do you know anything about my mother's death? Like, where she might be buried? Bennett shook his head.
I never even knew Ashton had passed away until your grandmother asked me to draw up a new will, leaving everything to you.
Do you remember when that was? Ellie asked. His gaze shifted skyward as he considered her question.
Sometime in the late 1990s, if I'm not mistaken. Her will is the original will. She never made any changes.
How did you know how to find me after my grandmother died? Did she leave contact information for me? He chuckled.
That would certainly have made my job a lot easier. But your grandmother knew nothing about you, aside from your name and your father's name. Your father was easy enough to find with his impressive resume.
Ellie had long since stopped caring whether her mean old grandmother had ever loved her. But hearing she'd known nothing about Ellie's life aside from her name cut her to the quick.
I sense there's something you're not telling me, Ellie. If there's anything I can help you with, you can speak to me confidentially.
I appreciate that, Bennett. It's nice to have someone I can trust. I'm trying to figure a few things out on my own. If I reach a dead end, you'll be the first to know. Chapter 23 Ellie. Her father hadn't changed since Ellie last saw him at Thanksgiving. Then again, Abbott Cohen hadn't changed much as long as she'd known him. He was trim and fit, with the healthy glow of a man who spent a lot of time outdoors. His hawkish nose prevented him from being considered handsome, but with soulful dark eyes and determination etched in his expression, his face commanded attention. He gave her a warm embrace before reaching for Pixie. He nuzzled his nose in the dog's fur and cooed about how much he'd missed her. Ellie smiled at his affection for her little dog. She thought of Julian and Mills. What was it about men and dogs? Clutching Pixie to his torso, Abbott took in the empty hall and living room.
You weren't kidding when you said you didn't have much furniture. Do you have any furniture?
Ha ha, yes. A few of the rooms are furnished. If you'd witnessed my grandmother's taste, you'd understand why I got rid of everything. A serious look crossed his face.
I was here for 5 minutes once. I never made it past the front hall, but I remember the interior being rather dismal.
Dismal is an understatement. She dragged her fingers across the damask wallpaper. This god-awful wallpaper is next to go. When Julian first saw the house, he likened it to Dracula's castle.
Julian, huh? I'd like to meet him. I hope he's coming for dinner.
Ellie shook her head. I invited him, but he insisted you and I needed time alone. He's eager to meet you too, though. Maybe tomorrow night, if we haven't taken off on a road trip to find my sister.
Abbott's body stilled. Do we even know where to look?
Not yet. I'm hoping we'll come up with a clue once we put our heads together.
Ellie glanced down at her father's suitcase resting upright on the floor beside him.
Believe it or not, I have 2 completely furnished bedrooms upstairs. Would you like to take a few minutes to get settled, or are you ready to eat?
I don't need to freshen up. Let's eat.
He rolled his suitcase to the bottom of the stairs and then followed her down the hall to the kitchen. While her father uncorked a bottle of Pinot Noir, Ellie ladled chili into 2 bowls and drizzled vinaigrette dressing onto the arugula salad. Julian's an architect, she said when she saw him thumbing through Julian's sketchbook. I'm thinking of expanding the kitchen, adding more workspace and an eat-in area out back. She motioned toward the door.
That would be nice.
Moving to the back door, he squinted his eyes as he peered out through the darkness.
Renovating a house like this is a big step for someone who's never owned a home.
That's why I'm dating an architect. Her attempt at making a joke fell short. I haven't made any final decisions about anything, Dad. I may sell this house and buy a smaller one in Charleston, or I may decide to move to Paris and live out my days painting the Arc de Triomphe and the Eiffel Tower. A lot depends on what happens with Leah.
If you move to Paris, I'll come visit you.
He returned to the sketchbook and flipped through to Julian's drawing of Ellie.
It's obvious how much Julian cares about you. The emotion he captured on your face is so intense. What were you reading when he drew this?
One of Mom's journals. She sprinkled cheddar cheese on the chili and added a sleeve of saltines to the tray. When she started to lift the food tray, Abbott bumped her out of the way.
Here, let me get that.
She grabbed the wine and 2 glasses and led him down the hall to her studio.
Thank goodness, he said, setting the tray down on the table. I was worried we were going to have to eat on the floor.
She tilted her head to the side as she studied her father's face.
What's with you, Daddy? You're in an awfully good mood considering the circumstances.
Do you have a new girlfriend?
Pink spots appeared on his tan cheeks.
I wouldn't call Tracy my girlfriend. We haven't been seeing each other long enough for labels. But, yes, I like her quite a bit.
Good for you, she clapped him on the shoulder. Does Tracy have a last name?
Tribble,
he said, coughing into his hand.
Tracy Tribble? She mouthed, and he nodded. I'd be hard-pressed to repeat her name 10 times in a row sober, and definitely not after I've had a glass of wine.
Good thing you won't ever need to. Abbott chucked her chin. And before you ask, she's a lobbyist, originally from Montana, and she likes to watch birds as much as I do.
She rolled her eyes. Sounds like a real match made in heaven. When do I get to meet her?
Soon, I hope. But you're right. This situation with your sister is serious. We need to put our love lives aside for the time being and focus on finding Amelia.
He moved to the windows, the light from the terrace sconces enabling him to see into the garden. As he wandered around, getting acquainted with the room, the sketch displayed on her easel caught his eye.
Is that Amelia with you?
He asked of the sketch. She joined him in front of the easels. We called her Leah, and yes, that's her.
The two of you look so terrified. What are you hiding behind?
Our mother's bedroom door, watching as our grandmother pushed her down the stairs. Ellie felt a chill and rubbed her bare arms.
Good Lord, Ellie!
He placed his arm around her and drew her close.
Are you sure it wasn't an accident?
I'm positive. Mom confirmed it in her journal. She broke her left wrist in the fall. My grandmother wouldn't let her see a doctor about it, just like she wouldn't let her see a cardiologist about her heart condition.
He shook his head in dismay. I'm so sorry, sweetheart. I underestimated the trauma you experienced while living here. The good news is you appear to have experienced some sort of breakthrough. The memories you suppressed are coming back to you.
I hope this traumatic event is the worst one, she said about the sketch. But I have no way of knowing for sure unless I find more journals or Maddie resurfaces. Ellie took her father by the arm and led him back to the table. I'm starving. Let's eat while we talk. I have a lot to tell you. While they ate, Ellie filled her father in on everything that she'd remembered and all she'd learned from her mother's journals. You're welcome to read them yourself. She eyed the journals stacked neatly on her desk. But I'll warn you, my grandmother was openly prejudiced against Jewish people. Mom was concerned that she would hurt Leah in some way because she resembled you. I'm sorry if that offends you, Dad. She was an evil woman. From what I learned about her, I'd go so far as to label her a psychopath.
People like that don't offend me. You know that about me. Maybe your mother sensed Leah was in danger and managed to somehow get her out of here.
Ellie said, there's always the chance that something bad happened to Leah, even if it was an accident. He eyed the leather-bound journals as one might an unfriendly dog.
I should probably read them. I don't care what your grandmother thought of me. It's your mother. I'm not sure I can handle what she said about me.
She loved you, Dad. I've often wondered about that myself, but she is very clear about her feelings for you.
Then why didn't she come to me when she learned she was pregnant instead of running away?
Ellie wiped her mouth and dropped her wadded-up napkin into her empty bowl. She retrieved the top journal from the stack and fanned the pages until she found a yellowed newspaper clipping. She slid the clipping across the table to him. On the day she found out she was pregnant, she saw this in the New York Times. The clipping was worn thin from years of being handled, but the photograph was clear enough to see Abbott with his arm draped around a woman's shoulders.
Abbott glanced at the article. I don't understand. What does this have to do with anything?
Who's the woman, Dad? He scrutinized the photograph.
I have no idea. I must have known her at the time, but that was 40 years ago.
Mom thought you were having an affair with this woman. Ellie tapped her finger on the newspaper clipping. According to Mom's journal, her roommate, Louisa, claimed that rumors were circulating among your friends that you were seeing someone out in California.
That's ridiculous. I was very much in love with your mother. I was planning to ask her to marry me and move with me out to California. I'd even gotten an audition for her in my next movie.
Ellie folded her arms over her abdomen. How did you find out she'd left New York?
I went to her apartment looking for her the minute I got off the plane from California. I had a diamond engagement ring in my pocket and everything.
Louisa wrote to Mom that she never heard from you, and that you never called or came looking for her after she left New York. He banged his fist on the table in a rare show of emotion.
That's a damn lie!
She understood her father was upset, but she wouldn't get her answers if she didn't press. Why would she lie about something so important?
I have no idea.
His eyes were dark with anger.
None of this makes any sense to me.
You're right about that. Ellie left the table and returned to her easels. Dad, there's something I need to ask you, and you need to tell me the truth.
I have never lied to you, sweetheart.
You've been a wonderful father to me, and I'm grateful for that. I can't imagine how hard it was for you to discover you had a 6-year-old daughter. But every time I've tried to talk to you about Mom, you shut me out.
She turned to face him.
Is that because you're hiding something from me? Did you know I have a twin sister?
Honey, no.
Abbott stood up and crossed the room to her.
Of course not.
He fingered a stray lock of hair out of her face.
I would never have kept your sister from you.
Then why have you been so against me remembering the past?
He sighed. Because, right or wrong, I was doing what I thought was best for you. You were such a scared little thing when you first came to live with me in California. I suspected you were abused in some way. And I was terrified that those memories, if they ever resurfaced, would cause you to have a mental breakdown.
Is that why you were so angry at me when I decided to move to Charleston?
I wasn't angry about you moving here. I was worried. Turns out my concerns were justified.
For several minutes, they stood in silence, staring at each other. I survived what happened to me here once, Daddy. Because of you, I went on to lead a happy life. With your help, I'll survive it a second time. I'm almost there. But I can't rest until I find my sister, if she's even still alive. Will you help me?
Of course, I'll help you.
He squeezed her arm.
She's my daughter. I have my own reasons for wanting to find her.
The only way we're going to solve this mystery is if you tell me everything you remember. You may remember a detail that you don't even realize is important. His shoulders slumped as he lowered his head.
We better make some coffee. It's going to be a long night.
Chapter 24 Abbott. They took their coffee out to the lounge chairs on the terrace. Abbott found it easier to tell his daughter his story through the darkness. I had the engagement ring in my pocket. I was going to ask your mother to marry me. How different things might have been for all of us. He closed his eyes as his mind drifted back 40 years. Abbott took a taxi straight from the airport to Nettie's apartment in Greenwich Village. He could hardly wait to ask Nettie to marry him. Fancy proposals weren't his style. When she opened the door, he planned to drop to one knee and slide the ring on her finger. He was confident she'd say yes. She loved him as much as he loved her. They had a bright future together in California as Hollywood's new golden couple. A glamorous model turned movie star and her brilliant film producer husband. He was disappointed to discover no one home when he arrived at her apartment. Sliding down the wall to the floor, he rested his head against his suitcase. Jet-lagged from his trip, he promptly fell asleep. Sometime later, Louisa nudged him awake by digging the toe of her black leather pump into his ribs. He climbed back up the wall. "Do you know when Nettie will be home? I've tried to call several times in the past few days, but no one ever answers. Have you girls been out partying every night?" he asked in a teasing voice. Louisa unlocked the door and held it open for him. "You'd better come in." Nettie's empty bedroom served as proof that she was gone. He was angry and confused, and he all but bullied Louisa for information. But he left the apartment 2 hours later, convinced she had no clue as to Nettie's whereabouts. Other than the first day they met, when she mentioned during her interview with Olga that she was from the South, Nettie had never spoken about her life before New York. He'd asked her repeatedly about her family and where she was from, but she refused to talk about her past. He'd never thought to press her, never dreamed the day would come he would need to find her. The South encompassed at least a dozen states, an area way too large to search for her. Every day for the next week, on the off chance she was still in New York, he roamed the streets of the village, hoping for a glimpse of her. He went to her favorite coffee shops and restaurants. He stopped by the corner market, her dry cleaners, and the pharmacy where she got her prescriptions filled. He called all her friends and work associates, but no one had seen or heard from her. Left with no choice, and with production on his new film starting in a week, he boarded a plane back to Los Angeles. Abbott realized almost immediately that he'd made a mistake, that cinematography wasn't for him. He was good at directing films. One of his movies was even nominated for an Academy Award. He just wasn't inspired by motion pictures. One autumn, he spent several days on a photo safari while on location in Africa. During this time, Abbott realized his true passion lay in photographing magnificent wild animals and their unspoiled habitats. As soon as he wrapped up that movie, Abbott resigned from Warner Brothers Studio and moved to San Francisco. For the next 2 years, he traveled to remote parts of the world as he built his portfolio. When his savings ran out, he paid the rent and supported his new addiction by freelancing for wildlife magazines, one of which was National Geographic. He met Jenny in a neighborhood bar late one night. They dated a few months, and in a moment of lust, he asked her to marry him. By the time he realized that mistake, his first son was on the way. 15 months later, Abbott was in his darkroom late one rainy Sunday afternoon when he heard the phone ring in a remote part of the house, followed by the shuffle of his wife's bedroom slippers on the linoleum floor in the outside hallway. She knocked on the door. "Phone's for you." He glanced at the stack of film rolls that needed processing. "Tell whoever it is, I'll call them back." "I tried. It's some lady. She says it's urgent." Abbott went to the kitchen to take the call. Jenny, with the baby propped on one hip, leaned back against the counter, taking deep drags of a cigarette while she eavesdropped on his conversation. In a dignified southern drawl, the woman introduced herself as Eleanor Pringle, mother to Ashton Pringle. Having never heard of either, he asked, "I'm sorry, who?" "My daughter, Ashton Pringle. I believe you knew her as Nettie Pearson." Nettie? After all this time? He collapsed against the refrigerator. "Of course. I know, Nettie. What can I do for you?" "New, Mr. Cone, as in the past tense. My daughter passed away this morning. She asked me to call you in the event of her death. She's been in ill health for some time. Giving birth to your daughter weakened her heart beyond repair." The hairs on the back of his neck stood to attention like soldiers. "Excuse me, did you say daughter?" "Yes, Mr. Cone, that's what I said. Your 6-year-old daughter is here with me now. But she won't be this time tomorrow if you don't come get her. I'm an old woman. I don't have the energy for raising a child." Abbott swallowed hard, his mouth and throat suddenly as dry as the Sahara. "Where do you live, Mrs. Pringle?"
"In Charleston, South Carolina," Eleanor Pringle said in a clipped tone. "If you catch the red-eye flight, you will get here in time."
Abbott was a seasoned traveler. He understood the logistical challenges of getting to South Carolina in a hurry. "In time for what, Mrs. Pringle? I'd have to leave my house in 30 minutes to make the flight. I'm not sure I can do that."
"If you're not here by noon tomorrow, I will drop your daughter off at the front steps of the local orphanage."
She spat out the address, and the line went dead. Feeling his wife's steely gaze on him, he turned his back on her while he jotted the address on the notepad they kept beneath the phone. He replaced the telephone receiver and rested his forehead against the upper cabinet while he collected his thoughts. 6 years old. He did the math in his head. The timing was spot on. Nettie had run away to South Carolina to have his baby. Why hadn't she come to him? He was planning to ask her to marry him anyway.
"Well," Jenny stubbed out her cigarette, "are you going to tell me what's going on?"
"I have to go to South Carolina on a family emergency," he said as he brushed past his wife. "I don't have time to explain." Abbott didn't realize until months later that Eleanor Pringle had been bluffing. She had no intention of taking Ellie to an orphanage. She'd given him her name. He would have gone straight to the authorities. They would have helped him track down his child. And when they saw how traumatized she was, they would have brought charges against Eleanor Pringle for child abuse. He rang the doorbell at the address written on the notepaper in his hand. When no one answered, he clanged the heavy knocker. A woman, dressed head to toe in black, with cropped gray hair and irises as dark as her pupils, answered the door.
"Mrs. Pringle, I'm Abbott Cone. I'm terribly sorry for your loss. I'm at a disadvantage here. Nettie, I mean Ashton, never told me she was pregnant. I would have done right by her. I loved your daughter very much."
Her fingers, gnarled like a bird's claws with long pointy nails, gripped his arm, yanked him inside, and closed the door behind him.
"This is not a social call, Mr. Cone. We have business to conduct.
which we will keep brief, and then you will leave. He raked his hands through his dark hair. I'd like to pay my respects to, Ashton. I brought clothes for the funeral,